This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 20th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is An Understanding of Creative Processing. This lecture is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
All right. Here is a second lecture this morning of October the 20th in the year after Dianetics, 1955. I want to talk to you concerning the third level of processing, use of creative processing therein. Oh, you're getting interested. Creative processing raises its ugly head again after all these years. Well, it's just about time that we understood what was going on in creative processing. Now, I've told you right here in London. I've told you right here many times what the score was with regard to creative processing, and that score was an interesting score. We didn't know why it was working, and I told you that. I said we didn't know quite why creative processing produced the immediate and direct result which it did produce. It just happened, I used to say to you, that if you keep a fellow mocking things up, and two or three here can remember that, you just keep a fellow mocking things up, why, after a while, why, he'll back out of his head. Well, we understand this now, showing that we are getting places. Our understanding is rising on a rough little point like this. We had a lot of significances, you understand, that we could have thrown into creative processing. We talked about these significances, but the real fact of the matter was, is we didn't know quite why, if we had somebody going on mocking things up endlessly, he would finally exteriorize. Well, I can tell you the answer now so fast you ought to be able to have gotten it before I tell you. You know about if communication is the most important corner of that triangle, and if you have to have a known terminal in order to invite communication, a scarcity of terminals then is absolutely necessary in its remedy if we are going to have an individual back off from a terminal. We have to change his mind about terminals. And so creative processing works. We simply have somebody mock up enough terminals and it works. Now you believe that creative processing can only be done by people who can do mock-ups. And that's not true. We have exceeded our own understanding. And it's very, very interesting. In fact, it is fascinating to discover that an individual can always mock up what he is mocking up. Got it? Q&A. He can always get a problem of comparable magnitude, can't he? Well, he can always mock up a terminal of comparable magnitude to himself, providing you modify the statement with this. Comparable to his idea of himself. Consideration is the important thing. So he can always mock up a terminal comparable to his idea of himself. And this is the basis and keynote of all mocking up. Now it's fascinating to understand, after all this time, that anybody can do mock-ups if he can receive an auditing command. I don't care how black is his field, or how green are the shooting stars that keep going by, or how utterly nothing some of the areas in the mock-up seem to be, he can always mock up a magnitude of terminal comparable to himself. Why? He knows he can have that terminal, so of course he could have another one like it. And he could have an infinity of terminals like that one. So, perforce, he must consider that the terminal he marks up is within the realm of his ability to mark up. And in order to understand creative processing, it is only necessary for you to understand what a mock-up is. A mock-up is any object located in space or absence of space which represents with solidity any idea a thetan can have. And it can be mocked up with or without energy or without space. Gee, that's broad, isn't it? Funny part of it is that the mock-ups your preclear is able to mock up, if he is able to receive an auditing command, will have both space and energy. And he can mock up both space and energy, and therefore a terminal, if you understand that the mock-up is simply symbolic of an idea he is capable of himself having, assimilating, or understanding. And you have him mock up any idea in space and mass that he himself can clearly, with great certainty and reality, understand, and he will have a clear, certain, and real mock-up, just like that. And this is the darndest thing you ever wanted to see. You have an individual mock up an unknown confusion as something he has never mocked up before, and he nearly always can hit it right on the head. And you just have him go on mocking up unknown confusions. Not unmocking them. Devil would try to unmock them. Skip them. He won't unmock terminals if he has too few terminals, and that is all there is to an inability to destroy in terms of creative processing. Anytime he can't get rid of a terminal, you say, well, he just doesn't have enough terminals. Let's get the idea of abundance clearly and at once and forevermore on the subject of communication. Communication is a process toward abundance. It is not a process toward create, change, and destroy. These points on the curve, the cycle of existence, create, change, and destroy, come about only when an abundance can be established. And I refer you to some of the earliest material on this subject, scarcity and abundance. Scarcity is understood by the idea of abundance. So there's nothing but abundance. Scarcity is understood by an idea of abundance, so there's nothing but abundance. This is fantastic. Not true. There's no such thing as an end or surfeit point to terminals. There cannot be too much real communication. There could be too much non-communication, but there couldn't be too much communication. Therefore, there cannot be too much any part of the communication formula. Let's take the whole communication formula as given in the creation of human ability, and add to it that little factor of interest, which, by the way, is covered quite adequately in Root 2, interest and disinterest. We look across it very nicely and very neatly, and we discover this fantastic thing, that there can't be enough of any one of those factors. These are infinite series factors. You never have to run then a reverse flow on any of these factors. You never have to run an end of cycle on any of these factors. You can use these factors to run out ends of cycle, but as far as the factors themselves are concerned, there cannot be enough terminals, enough intentions. Of course, you say, for heaven's sakes, this is ridiculous. You look across there at all those troops. You know, there's 8,000 men in the enemy army, and there's six of us. Looks like too many mock-ups to me from where I sit. Well, it's too many mock-ups for the situation, but it's not too many mock-ups for communication. And we're not trying to engage in slippy logic, but let's take a look at this logic. It means that these mock-ups, in their numerousness, all out of communication, except in a deadly sort of way, are going to wipe out all our communication terminals, because you can't have one of those terminals a communication terminal, and that's all an enemy is. It's somebody we cannot have as a communication terminal. We cannot use that enemy as our communication terminal. And if we cannot use him as our communication terminal, he is there and then an enemy. And a person has as many enemies as he has people he cannot use as a communication terminal. You want to know how many enemies your preclear has, and he probably doesn't know himself. He just knows they're vast. You just start asking him this question. Now, who could you use as a communication terminal? Who would relay at least a thought of you? Who would talk about you anyhow? And the fellow gives you a thud and so on, and you couldn't use this one, that one. Who could you use? Expand it. Don't contract it. Don't run. How many couldn't you have? Where can't you communicate? See? Don't run these things. Find people you couldn't use as a communication terminal. That's a horrible auditing command, see? Because it's a lie. It says that there is a finite number of terminals. And that is a lie. The number of terminals are infinite. The number of intentions are infinite. The number of communication particles could be infinite. The number of causes could be infinite. The number of effects could be infinite. The number of distances and the lengths of the distances could be infinite. Anything. Anything you want. But it's all infinite. It goes toward abundance. And anytime we try to run communication on the basis of scarcity and shortage, we get nowhere. And the preclear bogs. And this is an immediate analysis of all processes. If you look at a process and you say this once upon a time was considered more or less workable, was it or wasn't it? Is it or isn't it? You don't have to test it. You just look it over and say, does it favor an abundance of communication? And if the answer is no, it was a bad process. That's all there is to it. Exteriorization is good because it guarantees an abundance of communication, but will not take place if an individual does not have an idea of an abundance of communication terminals. If his abundance is so short that he can only have himself as a communication terminal, his body, he calls it himself, why then, of course, he isn't going to exteriorize. But if there's one other person in the world that he might be able to use as a communication terminal, even to the point of merely getting this person to certainly and confidently relay a communication, and even much lower than that, if there's anybody in the world that will talk about him, bad or good, some slight chance of exteriorization could occur. But that chance is improved to the degree, now let's go back up that scale. That's a specific scale, by the way. Let's go back up it. Furthest removed, people who would talk about you, bad or good. Next point on the scale is people who would relay with certainty communications for you or about you. And the next point up the scale would be, of course, terminals you could actively utilize in communication. Now, when we increase those abundances, that's fine, but all we've got to do is increase the idea of abundances, because all we're trying to do is change the preclear's mind. We're trying to get him to change his mind. We're trying to get him to assume greater power of choice. Now, there is another scale, which is the third dynamic scale. Number of people who will talk about things. Now, this, oddly enough, is not number of people participating, see? Number of people who will talk about things. They won't go to the game, they will talk about it. Number of people who will actively sit there and watch the game is the third dynamic parallel to this other curve. Number of people who will participate in the game. See, that's the parallel level. And that is as good as it's abundant, and that is what you object to on the third dynamic, that one, there are damn few participants. Below that, we're getting quite a few people, true, who will watch a game, but with no great interest. And three, we're objecting to the fact that people don't even talk about it. See, when you get a scarcity on that line, then a group such as ours starts to get active in a society. Because a scarcity of communication has been invented. Too many stopped lines, insufficient amount of communication. Third, dynamically, then, we don't have a communication availability. And not having that, why, we say, let's put people in communication. About what it amounts to. Actually, we do sense this fact. Once the third dynamic has arrived at the level of hardly anybody playing the game, just a handful of terminals present, even if they are terminals, even able or willing to watch a game, and people not even talking about the game that's going on, when we arrive at a certain make-break point on that point, we have succumbed. We have the desire to chuck it all and get another mock-up in the hope that it will be a communication terminal, but oddly enough, no security that another mock-up will ever arise. Boy, if that isn't an apathy about communication, see? We have a thing called an atom bomb. We're not absolutely sure there's going to be any Earth here in 30 years. No certainty at all that there will be an Earth here in 30 years. Well, we do know one communication terminal called Earth, and we're certain of that, and we don't get off of it, mostly because we don't know of any other planets. Now, if we start chalking it up amongst us, we might be able to get a couple other planets around that we could hazard the existence of and so forth, but no great certainty on this level. Now we've moved it up to the sixth dynamic. And what's your scarcity communication on the sixth dynamic? It's just scarcity of planets. We know one, certainly, that could serve as a communication platform, you see, or a terminal for sun rays and so on. But move it up to the eighth dynamic, and there's hardly anybody here could discuss intelligently or with certainty the existence of other time continua than the physical universe. See, this, we're pretty... that's real unreal. I mean, is there any other universe but this physical universe? And we kind of get the idea, well, look, it's occupying all the space. All the space there is physical universe space, you see. So where would any other universe be? That's a scientific idea, by the way. That all the space, if you look for another universe, why, you'd find something inside this existing space. You doubt that? Do you know that they've changed their nomenclature in the last 10 years? And their word universe now means a series of galaxies. Are you aware of that? A series of galaxies visible from a telescope, with a telescope. Now, if that isn't the bending around of a word, this isn't even vaguely factual that this is its definition. But a universe for our purposes and our youthful purposes would be a time-space continuum. And you could have an entirely different space. It would not necessarily be in conjunction with this space or in this space or outside this space or anything else. It's just an idea of a different time continuum. You'd have another universe, and that's about all there is to that. But to people who have lost their power of choice under the onslaught of the law of conservation of energy, Newton's law of interaction, that loses one his power of choice, by the way. You should be aware of the fact that Newton's law of interaction is an expression of the overt act motivator or dead-dead-ex phenomena. For every action, there is an equal and contrary reaction. Is a physical expression of the fact, if you do something to me, something's going to happen to you. This gets more involved. If you do something to me, the same thing will occur to you. See, that's the interchange of communication there in an effort to keep it terminal. Well, these laws have bogged down this idea. And so if an individual thinks, get this as an overt act, an individual thinks the thought of another universe, which is outside this time continuum, And he therefore expresses another universe, and he's going to cost somebody finite, understandable communication terminals. Somebody in his activity is liable to flip over to that other universe, you see. Could be said the main goal of this universe, or this Earth certainly, or Thetan, could be the establishment of the optimum communication situation. That's the level he seeks. And for every man it is different. It is the establishment of an optimum communication condition. And from man to man we get this terrific individuality of opinion on what is the best communication intention, what is the best terminal, what is the best distance, what is the best cause, and what is the best effect to affect communication. And no matter how it looks at first glance, every living being has arrived at and is seeking to maintain something within the range of his optimum idea. There is something within a range. It is maybe not the best, it's maybe not the worst, but it is in range. He has a gradient scale from the way things are to the way they should be. And somewhere on this gradient scale, he would consider an optimum condition to exist. But as is within his finite understanding, he says people should not talk all the time about their illnesses. In the same sentence as assumed, people have something else to talk about. See? So he's somewhere near optimum, and he's merely trying to adjust life to a better optimum. When the revolutionists of France come and take over, and everybody likes from strawberries, they have promised a new world order, and they get the communication condition which they in the past have found optimum. Hay seeds in their hair and patches in their pants. That's a good terminal. So we get the French emissaries of the Napoleonic era, very good representations of what the worst dressed man shall wear. It was not really a revolution against the aristocrat. They simply sought a better level of communication terminal. They got it. Now, women are more anxious about this than men. And they change their fashions more often. They're trying to reach more narrowly a good communication condition. So they change their mock-ups all the time by changing their clothes and so forth. Men have a greater tendency to go off in another direction. They want to change the particle. The woman likes to change the terminal. The man wants to change the particle of communication. He varies in his thought on this between, he varies in his thought. Our handshakes, hearty slaps on the back, communication particles, see, fists, bullets, bombs, and he's always changing his particles. Quite curious. He's changing his particles all around. He's also, to some degree, changing his mock-up around. But he has a tendency to kind of insist that the mock-up be sufficient. These are merely philosophies, however. They're merely ideas, and they are certainly subject to change. All right, we can have a society where men are trying to change their mock-ups all the time, and women are trying to change their particles. You know, they have printing, they have printed calling cards, and they're always changing their calling cards around, and changing their notepaper, and doing this and doing that, or changing their particles. So we could get the Amazon type of society where they're shifting things over to spears. Now, is the spear the best particle? No, this year we're using arrows. No, next year we'll be using slings, small stones. People are seeking the optimum particle. Well, now, it is the concept of any nation engaged in war that it is unable to communicate because it is being opposed by people who insist it doesn't communicate. And do an analysis on the third dynamic of the situation. Follow me? So we get a nation like Russia today, insistent on getting a more certain terminal everywhere. The anxiety of any politically active nation which is seeking to spread its political philosophy by any means whatsoever, fair or foul, into every other nation tells you that they are having a hard time trying to communicate with other countries. And their solution to it is to make everybody just like themselves. See? Now, this is the way we go about it, then. We find Russia out of communication. Who the devil wants to walk across all that snow and ice to talk to Ivan? See? They've always had trouble communicating. As a matter of fact, it gets so cold that when they step out into the cold, the lack of heat takes the warmth from their bodies. Swish! See? Get the idea? In other words, here's an enforced outward communication without any choice of their own. The Russian's real interesting. He's real interesting as a personality. I don't know if you've ever known very many Russians, but they are interesting personalities. They mirror the effect of severe cold. They mirror the effect of distant cultures being out of communication with them. They picked up the entire French ballet one time and moved it lock, stock, and barrel straight into the capital of Russia. Now we have Russian ballet. But they snapped that terminal in, probably in some kind of an effort to talk to France. You see? They have learned and had, at one time or another, two or three languages as their favored court language. It's never been Russian. Well, they know Russian doesn't communicate with Italy. See? Here's an anxiety about terminal, which is very interesting, and it's expressing itself in the world today in various ways. It's quite interesting that it expresses itself so forcefully. It's an anxiety about communication. They are too far off from optimum, and they are making a savage effort to get back to what they consider optimum. But when they get back to it, what was their idea of an optimum communication terminal? One of Napoleon's emissaries? You know, these guys never bathe from one year to the next. Their red, white, and blue ribbons had soup and wine stains on them. They smelled. Their idea of a terminal was something very weird. Much worse, by the way, than the Hitlerian emissaries that were dashing around Europe. You knew they were coming because of the sound of their boots. The Napoleonic emissary, you smelled him long before he got there. Quite interesting. When they retain or regain complete freedom to put up a terminal or establish a communication line, what is it? And when you face a revolution and have to throw your chips in on one side or the other, there's a revolution, you just pick out the side that has an idea of communication terminal closer to yours. And you will be less disappointed. There's nothing like being overjoyed because of a revolution. You'll be less disappointed. There's many a stupid rich man sitting around the world supporting subversive organizations of one kind or another because he believes honestly the world would be better off with this. And he reads their idealisms. And then one day the revolution takes place and he finds out this wasn't his idea of setting up a communication pattern of terminals or intentions or anything else. And he's shocked and horrified, and he also gets shot. But these fellows are around doing this, you see. So we have back of the actual activity of communication the idea of what communication is. And you, as an auditor, should never miss that. You have your idea of what an optimum communication setup would be. You probably never articulated it. If you did, you'd as is it and change it. Very probably. But you have pretty close to a good idea of what you consider an optimum communication condition. Your preclear sits there with probably an entirely different scale of values on exactly the same factors. Now, less your values, but more his values of what is optimum communication are arrived at by having been made anxious about and being driven out of communication. And his first communication values will be diffident. If he's a 1-5 or something like this, they'll be solid. All values of communication are solid. The way to really make a communication would be to kill everybody off and have some lumps sitting around. So you just delete life from the whole thing. Well, this guy'd be crazy, of course, if he had such an idea. It's hardly a communication idea, but he thinks that this is necessary to get communication. Now, he's never taken the second step. Then, to whom would you speak? You could absolutely murder a nuclear physicist. Murder him. He would go batty right in front of your face if you could get to him and really put the idea into his skull as a relay from you to him. He'd probably have to say, I don't know, 8,000-9,000 times before he'd finally say, oh, there's somebody talking to me, you know, that isn't messed. You could say, you've got a very successful bomb, but to whom are you going to talk after it's used? The idea's never occurred to him. Who is he going to talk to? Where is he going to find a terminal to talk to? If you got that idea through to him, the man would say, yeah. To what am I supporting now? He's supporting a wipeout of all communication terminals and factors. He doesn't even believe he's a ghost. He doesn't even believe that he can exteriorize after this explosion. He has no knowledge of the mind at all. What complete depth of no communication is his optimum communication? Now, we assume that he must feel to some degree that he is assisting communication by knocking everybody out. He must assume this. Of course, he's sitting way back, taking no responsibility for any of the forces that will ever use the bomb. He's just a scientist, and he just works it out. What a guy. You talk about an ambulance zero. Well, what's his idea of communication? He does have an idea of communication. The oddity is, it's a talk about horror. Inventively. It's not a participant. It's not even a spectator. He'll never be there to see the bomb go off. He can't imagine this. He's certainly never going to be the guy that sets it off. So he's a talk about horror case. And if you publish enough newspapers in a land and give them enough complete license to print nothing in the paper, but their idea of what communication is, which isn't an idea, they'll eventually educate a lot of people into the fact that talk about horror is the only line of communication possible. And then somebody, of course, can go on and create all the horror they want to, and we eventually wipe out the talk about horror thing, see? We even wipe out the guys who were just talking about horror. There's nothing anybody can do about this horror. They just read it in the newspapers. You know, I seriously doubt that 1/1,000th of the newspaper stories printed have any truth in them. I don't think these situations exist. I, too, have watched a city desk at work. In comes the reporter. dog's been run over. Next thing you know, there's a small boy that had a dog run over. Next thing you know, why, somebody has just villainously run over a small boy's dog. And we get this cord built up after a while to a point where it's a story. Under the apt tutelage of the city editor, there's a guy and a girl, and they're kind of fond of each other, and they've been associated with each other for some little time in a professional capacity, and they've got an apartment. They've had this for a long time. Of course, every other man and woman in the society, one way or the other, has not necessarily second dynamic liaisons, but certainly friends of a very intimate nature outside the sphere of immediate marital activity. This would be a nutty society if every time you got married, you immediately had no other friends but your wife or your husband. I mean, this would be a real dopey. Of course, that's the end product of the propaganda of certain churches. They believe this should occur. But anyhow, this couple have gone just a little bit further, and it's not anything that isn't being done by 90% of the people reading the newspaper or something like this. And there's a divorce being filed by the spouse of one or the other of them. It was a pretty aberrated character, and we hear about this thing. This situation, which is actually possibly tailor-made so that a divorce can take place or something of the sort.
Where do we read in the paper? Drool, drool, drool. Love nest raided by police. Slap, slap.
Then we go and manufacture the whole thing. Getting it done. Except the paper doesn't know it's lying. And that would be a delusory state. And I have not gone so far as to say the papers are psychotic. I merely say they should all be in institutions. Delusion. Instead of reporting things, you delusify them. Very few people are crucified by the press. They're delusified by it. Anyhow, horrible pun. Anyway. Here you have, then, an education about talk about horror. Let's talk about bad things. Let's send way off over here someplace in the corner with no responsibility for anything that's going on and talk about bad things, see? Now, let's not do anything about this. It's not anything we can look at. We'll read about it or talk about it, and that'd be all, you see. Now, if people have that as a fine idea of how to rig up a communication line, then the other dynamics are going to suffer markedly, because what'll happen? There's nobody left on deck. And after a while, everybody is over-talking in the corner. All the people that are over-talking in the corner about these horrible bad things suddenly discover they aren't standing on anything and haven't got any bodies. Well, you talk about mystery. Now they can't even talk to each other about what a mystery it all is. Follow me? See, it all snuck up on them, and it wasn't anything they had anything to do with, you know? There they stood with a smoking gun in their hand with no responsibility at all. I wonder how that thing went off. Nevertheless, even their goal is an optimum communication, modified by the existing communication. Now let's take up that. Every idea of optimum is modified by the available. And people will take the available in lieu of the optimum. But we'll try to make the available more closely approach the optimum. And you can tell which way their optimum is with the greatest ease by finding out which way they're trying to put the available. And it's very good, you see. I mean, you could simply say the available, what are they doing with the available communication? Well, and their optimum is either north or south of this. If they're trying to suppress or knock out the available communication, then their idea of communication is some other idea. We just not be adventurous and say it's so and so and so and so unless we inspect it a little bit. It's just some other idea of what communication is. And by the way, that other idea will contain a modification, and it will contain all the factors, by the way, without any modification, that are listed in the Creation of Human Ability and in Dynex 1955. It'll contain all of these factors, but they've got an idea of how each one of these factors should be in order to produce an optimum communication. And this is almost never subjected to test. They have not found out that it will or will not work. It is simply an idea of how these things should be. So if they think you talk too much or that you put out too many ideas and that sort of thing, then their idea of optimum communication is south of yours. That's all. See, it's just, you don't have to analyze it any further. It's south of yours. It's not necessarily more succumb than yours is, but it's certainly south of yours. It might be that they have some kind of a bug like this. Only men are communication terminals. This would be an interesting bug, wouldn't it? And let's say you're a woman. Well, obviously, if you are a woman and only men can communicate, then you, acting as a communication terminal, are to be silenced. You get how selective this could be. Now, people have large assorted opinions of who and what should operate as a terminal. In other words, who should talk and what should talk. Who and what should operate as a terminal. And this modifies their entire idea of communication. You'll go into an army, you'll say some of the darndest things. You know, you want to get around and look at this because it presents a new view to him. You'll find an army or a people or something of the sort totally possessed of this idea. They will say, well, only my officer talks for me. And they're perfectly happy if their officer talks. See, for them, if their officer talks, then they are aware of having communicated. There's nothing wrong with this at all. Whole armies and people have this. But they themselves won't talk. In other words, all our communication is channeled. And they seem to be perfectly satisfied with this. Their communication terminal, then, is not the body, is not anything which they themselves have, but it is something which is granted over to something. Now, that's a pretty wild idea, isn't it? Well, it's just what you're doing with a voice box. That's just what you're doing with the idea of the brain and the voice box. Got it? I mean, that's just what you're doing. You're perfectly satisfied if something talks for you. If you never talk, something talks to you. You see, isn't that cute? Mock-up's talking down there. I'm perfectly satisfied. Same thing as a whole lot of communication terminals standing around saying, only my officer can talk for me, you see. Now, one time in the very, very back jungle depths of India, one time, was astonished when I tried to communicate with a very wise and holy man that I had heard about. And I was trying to communicate with this fellow, and I was doing fine except for this. The terminal was, well, a person I guess you would consider his chamberlain. And the communication particle was a small boy. And the communication was a note. In the same room, all people were present. And I was interrupting the living daylights out of the communication line. I didn't have a small boy to take the note from the other small boy. And I had no chamberlain to read the note. And as a result, we were practically totally out of communication. You understand? I mean, the wise man would sit there and think a thought, and his chamberlain would kind of pick this up in thin space in some fashion, and then he would write it down on a little piece of paper one way or the other and give it to the small boy, and the small boy would put it on the end of a little gold wand which had a slot in it, and he put that in, and he would come across and he would hand this to me. I would say something to him. He was deaf, dumb, and blind. I mean, he didn't know what was going on. There was English around there. It's no esoteric language. It was perfectly good English. And I would have to write down some other note on this note and put it back in the cleft stick and get it back to the small boy. And the small boy walked across to the other side of the room, a small room too, by the way, and give it to the chamberlain. The chamberlain would read it, and he'd kind of think a thought. And then the wise man would sit there and ponder for a little while. And then the wise man would think a thought of some kind or another. And the chamberlain would kind of pick this up out of thin space. And we were going through these communication vias. Only they were doing it badly, and they were a little bit disturbed, and they were a little bit upset, and I never knew until I began to know a lot about communication and so forth. What disturbed them was nothing really disturbed them of any kind whatsoever. It wasn't the questions were disturbing to him. They were rather sharp and close, not about their identity or something of the sort, but just about some facts about existence. And the only thing was, is I should have had a small boy there with at least a silver stick, preferably a silver stick, so he could tell the difference between the terminals, you see. And it should have had a cleft in the end, and the other small boy should have come over and stuck the stick in my little boy's wand, and my little boy should have come back and seen my gun bearer or something of the sort, who operated as chamberlain, and the gun bearer should have read the thing, and then he should have thought about it, and then I should have sort of interpreted what the gun bearer was thinking about, and I should have turned around to him and sort of given him a little nod, and he would have written something down on a piece of paper, and he would have put it in the end of the small boy's stick. The small boy would crawl across the middle of the floor, and the other small boy would have come up, and they would have changed the note in the ends of their two sticks, and they would have walked back to the chamberlain, and the chamberlain on the other side would have taken it away from the stick, and he would have read it, and then he would have thought, now this is real wild, see? But actually, when two people are talking, that's what's going on all the time. This is what's worrying some of you right now. If you make somebody go through the exact motions of the communication formula, duplicating each step, getting every single consideration, the consideration to talk, the consideration of what to talk with, you get the idea? It drives them wild. But what are you doing but being a wise man, sitting back from something that thinks, picking up the thoughts from this thing in some fashion or another, and then thinking the decisive thought, and then and telepathizing this thing? The first time I ever hear a thetan muttering in English with sound waves down to his voice box to tell it what to say, why, we will omit this telepathic step. Here is not just telepathy, but here's the total evidence of telepathy for us. Anyone would ever need, you don't have to discuss, does telepathy exist? What you should discuss is, why doesn't it exist? Why isn't it sharper? And why doesn't it exist better? And why isn't it better channeled? Since each one of you must be totally capable of using telepathy. You see, it isn't really that you hear a thing anywhere, because in the final analysis, there's no place for the sound wave to arrive to go across the gap between the chamberlain and the wise man. At any event, you're going to have to pick up some kind of a telepathic impulse from the last piece of matter that could resonate, because none of you resonates. In other words, there can't possibly be a communication system between living beings without telepathy being employed somewhere or another. Then why, in the name of common sense, do they use all of these vias in order to accomplish a communication? Do they have terminals? They have this, do they have that? Why do they use all these things? To have communication, of course. If you didn't have all these vias, you wouldn't have any communication. That's all there is to it. And somebody's optimum communication idea is this wise man down in the jungle. He knows how to have communication. You got it? He knows how to have communication. You put this many vias on the line. He probably has the idea that if he thought all of his thoughts at you, you'd simply know him and you would go away and he wouldn't have had a chance to talk to a soul. Get it? Communication is something to do. That's really the most that can be said for it. It is the only pay there is. And a pauper is the man who can't talk or listen. You ought to feel sorry for some of these guys that sit behind the bank president's desks and the high governmental and military posts that don't talk, you know? Or just some of these guys that sit around and don't give you any acknowledgement. You better feel sorry for these guys, because they can't be paid. There's no way for them to collect any pay. And they will just go on, and their body gets more and more solid, and they try to get more interesting somatics and conditions and so forth, and they're sort of apathetically trying to get to a position where somebody might talk to them. They've lost any real idea about it at all. So they can't be paid. What's this got to do with creative processing? Well, I think it's pretty adequately got to do with creative processing. Guy has an idea of what a communication terminal should be. Therefore, he can mock up one. If the philosophy of communism, or let's say that Russia had adopted the philosophy of yip-slattleism, which consisted of the fact that when men met, they should wiggle their ears. Anything like that. And it developed this as a great philosophy. Politics. People who didn't wiggle their ears, you know, you could work this out tremendously. People who didn't wiggle their ears were, by and large, antipathetic to good communication. And people who only wiggled their right ears were obviously conservative czarists, and people who wiggled their left ears were obviously right there on the ball for the party. But they didn't know what the score was because they didn't wiggle both ears. We developed this into a fine-blown philosophy. We would find Russia with an anxiety about communication trying to introduce this onto every nation on the face of Earth. Unfortunately, a German by the name of Marx dreamed up a philosophy that the Russian got hold of and has been exporting it ever since. You see? Then any dopey philosophy, no matter how dopey, actually could be exported if it was somebody's idea of how to get a better communication going. Follow me? Anybody then is liable to sell almost any kind of a philosophy if it happens to come, he thinks, closer to his optimum communication pattern. Then what is this communication pattern? Better or worse? It becomes very amusing when you yourselves understand this because you find yourself kind of 3 feet above the society's head. Not necessarily laughing at the society, but certainly in another strata of communication. And you see that very clearly and closely because you talk to each other with the greatest of ease. And you don't talk with difficulty the rest of society, but it's not the same game that it was. As you become more proficient, you recognize exactly what and why these guys are talking, exactly what they're saying and doing, and you yourselves are built up sufficiently on a telepathic angle, whether you know it or not. Your telepathy has gotten better so that you know what they're going to say before they express it in words because they're kind of bum at it, you know. They don't channel it or direct it very well. And we find people dull to talk to. But we wouldn't be studying here and looking over communication, Scientology, and life in general if we hadn't found things were very dull in the first place. Right? All right, so we're just making another game. Well, that's all right, but it's a game of understanding, and we are not then reactively banging around at the behest of what other thetans have discovered by using the former generations of our bodies as communication. Educated mechanisms, you see. We see these things at work and they puzzle us and upset us. All right. Now, you think at once that the worst engagement that you could engage upon would be to handle mass and energy in order to bring about a change of mind. But this isn't entirely true. Where there's an anxiety about mass or energy or terminals, you would certainly better get somebody to change his mind. Follow me? And this then could be one of the more serious anxieties if changing space and energy carries with it such liability. Then we would say space and energy has a rather considerable place in processing. See? And it's the problem of on what are we going to stand while we are talking, across what are we going to talk when we are talking, and to what and with what are we going to do identification so that we can have terminals and know who and what we're talking to, and we get a system worked out so that we aren't on total telepathy. Now, if we're on total telepathy, we wouldn't have any need to communicate, and therefore we'd have no communication, and so couldn't get paid. And you've got the upper end of the game. See that? Well, not knowing this is therefore necessary to the communication formula. And you can add it right into creation of human ability as part of the factors, cause and effect and intent and distance, you see, interest. And not knowingness. You mock up a bunch of not knowingness so that you don't telepath the whole game to hell. And you just don't mark this up, that's all. You leave it on automatic, because you shouldn't want to be responsible for your own not knowing this. You want to not know about not knowing, don't you? That's the best way to rig this up. Well, creative processing only becomes difficult when a great deal of unknowingness or not knowingness is present in the mock-up. And the mock-up is confusion plus unknowingness, or just plain unknowingness. And we get an unknowingness mock-up going, the individual feels that he must have terrific unknowingness in order to get an enormous amount of interest in him. He must mock up tremendous quantities of not knowingness about around non-extant terminals in order to talk to them. He goes around and enhances with great mystery all kinds of things so that he will look at them. You get it? And he doesn't have any malice aforethought on this. He is making a game. And it ceases to become a game when he ceases to have control of some majority of parts of a game, see? He no longer has control of these parts, therefore they can go wild, and he finds himself playing anybody's game that happens along. And that's his reactive bank. It simply plays anybody's game. Somebody says, yup, and he says, yap, and away it goes. And he says, what the devil is happening here? He doesn't know. All right. Therefore, creative processing is done today simply on the basis of having the individual mock up anything that he can mock up. What can he mock up? He can mock up unknownness. He can mock up black, confused terminals. Does he have to do anything with them? Does he have to throw them away after he's mocked them up? No, because there can't be a too great an abundance of them. So we don't worry about him destroying them at first. He's holding them in as long as they're scarce. If an aberrated person were to refuse to communicate with us, we might start handing him pieces of paper, blank pieces of paper, and we hand him another blank piece of paper, and he takes that and holds that to his bosom. We hand him another blank piece of paper, and he takes that and holds that to his bosom, and we hand him another blank piece of paper, and he takes that and holds it to his bosom. We hand him another blank piece of paper, and he holds that. And we hand him another blank piece of paper, and he accepts this more slowly. And we hand him another blank piece of paper, and then we ask for that last one back, and he gives it to us, and shortly he's in communication with us. See how this would be? Mm-hmm. All right, now an individual will then start talking the moment he's certain that he has a terminal. He will also throw away a terminal when he's certain he can have other terminals. Also, he isn't near as careful of other terminals from a standpoint of preserve them, don't talk to them, don't as-is them, leave them there, and so forth. The moment that he is fairly sure that other terminals can be brought into existence, and we get him to change his mind with this type of processing. The automaticities in the bank are simply automaticities of don't-knowness. Individual doesn't know, so therefore the control factor is shot one way or the other. Just have him mock up shot unknown control factors. He'll get all kinds of wild terminals. We don't care what he puts up, as long as he puts up something. People who with black fields can very often mock up black masses in the blackness. Well, don't you worry about making them throw them away, because they haven't got enough yet. You see, just as that person that was aberrated you gave pieces of paper to would not give you those pieces of paper back until he had a lot of pieces of paper, so an individual will not throw one of these mock-ups away until he has an awful lot of mock-ups. Now, an individual is unable to do good mock-ups. Let's have him do the side of the mock-ups that he can do, bad mock-ups. And let's just have him mock up unknown and confused masses. And let's have him mock them up behind him when the flows get too great and this way and that. And the first thing you know, he improved his consideration of being able to mock up terminals. You improved his consideration of what and how he can communicate. So creative processing becomes rather a hodgepodge of, it's done according to its rules and all the rules of auditing, but it becomes a hodgepodge mess, whereas you wanted him to mock up a clear, pretty girl. You say, mock up your idea of women. You don't have to hang him with it by making that specific, but you ask him to mock up a confused unknowingness that's a woman. He'll mock something up. It's quite curious. Now, the present time problem is the body. What does the body look like to him? Does it have a face? Does it have a nose? Does it have toes? No! No, it's quite fascinating. It doesn't have any of these things. It's a confused, whirling black mass. That's a body. That's his viewpoint, is a theta of the body. It is an invisible shaft. That's a body. The idea? You just find out what he can mock up by simply having him mock up what he can already handle, namely his idea of what he is using as communication terminals. Have him mock up black unknowingnesses as things that he can talk to. Now, there are many other parts of the formula which are useful and so on, and which we will take up at great length, but this is a very, very important part of it. You must have a terminal in order to communicate. Otherwise, people don't communicate to you. You simply use telepathy, and there you are. Thank you.
Thank you very much.